Saha says, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Sciatic Nerd. Tonight we also have Cooper, Vesh, and Ivory Wolf with us. We're here to talk about some stories, starting with the British authorities demand encryption keys in a case with huge implications, says an article from The Intercept. So basically, the British authorities are attempting to force someone accused of hacking the U.S. government, I guess the whole thing, by forcing them to hand over their encryption keys. They believe that this is going to have huge, wide effects on everything. Coop, what do you think, man?
I'm thinking, you know, handing over personal property and, you know, just throwing him in jail for not complying just is a really bad direction to go. And it doesn't matter if it really actually will lead to something or not. You know, just insinuation is not proof.
True enough indeed. Wolf, you got some opening thoughts on this?
Yeah, I have to agree with Coop on this. When it comes to something like this, you know, encryption keys, I mean, it's, you can't really, you know, prove, for starters, you know, if they're actually his keys that he was using, can you really prove that, you know, he was part of all of this? And because of the privacy as well, I mean, you can't really force that on someone. I say, please tell me, please, please.
Right? And well, Vesh, I know you've got to have an idea.
I do. And my idea is that I love the commentary from all the American attorneys or pseudo attorneys that don't understand that they don't have a constitution, at least not the same way we do. That whole bit about not being able to hand over your encryption keys as part of a freedom of speech or whatever, that's tenuous at best in Britain, I believe. I mean, just if you just look at what comprises the thing they call a constitution, it's starting with the Magna Carta, going all the way to the Succession to the Crown Act, and then they just kind of bang that all together into one amalgamated constitution. It's not the same thing as ours. Imagine if our constitution was the same size as our tax code.
Oh my gosh!
You know, don't you think you can find a few loopholes in there to make sure somebody can hand over their encryption keys?
Yep, most definitely.
I mean, it's still wrong. It's wrong based on, you know, a human rights thing, but you know, it's not a, if somebody's going, well, that's unconstitutional, I'm like, that's Britain. That's Britain, and our constitution doesn't apply to British citizens. So,
no, you know,
I'm against it. I'm still against it, but I'm still four square behind it. But you know, just I can't stand idly by and sit and people say, well, that's unconstitutional. It's like, well, against whose constitution?
Well, right, because if you look at the way, as you said, the way that they handle things, you know, the way it's being handled, the implication is that there's this, it wasn't originally about the hacking piece alone, or at least not limited to it, but now it's taking on this whole different perspective because everyone's trying to turn everything into a story about free speech and privacy, the right to privacy, when, as you already mentioned, it's been mentioned by everybody here, that it's a different culture and they don't have the same freedoms or restrictions. It's all different. But on the international stage, I think we tend to lose our own perspective. You guys agree, disagree?
I agree. First world problems is limited focus and limited perspective. When we're blessed by values and rights over here in the U.S., and unfortunately that gives us colored glasses to look at the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we don't forget that people are different and other countries have different rules, we're going to end up in, you know, some third world country's jail just for being stupid Americans. You know, just got to understand where you are and what's going on there when you really apply your own thoughts and values to it.
So moving on real quick, the how $80 billion moving through the New York Fed daily could be vulnerable. I think now, since everybody's talking about hacking in general and how at risk all of our data is, the idea that there's a risk to all the money that moves back and forth. Why now? What suddenly triggered this, oh my gosh, money moves? This is nothing new. We all know about everything. It's just dots on the wire. What is it? What do you guys think caused
it? It's the bank. It's the Bangladesh thing. That's it. That's the. It, they saw how easy it was for these guys to come in and steal, and you know the Fed Reserve is going to have none of that unless it's you know them stealing. But they only steal from taxpayers. They don't steal from other people. They just steal from taxpayers. But
it's just an opinion, of course.
Don't you ever dip in the Don's money?
Cough, cough. Trump, okay. What?
Stop. Oh boy. Okay.
Yes, yes, I went there.
So, okay.
This is one of the beautiful things about broadcasting from here is that we actually do get that freedom of speech part.
That's true.
Except,
I don't want to manage the discussion board should we decide to. I'm not here to choose sides on that stuff. I'd rather focus on the technical issues that we face.
Oh, indeed. This is why we don't allow comments. That way, no dissent. No dissent other than what we have here.
Wolf, do you agree?
So, but it was just, it was an easy, it's become like, like Vegas back in the 50s,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when all the wise guys were moving in. It's easy. It's too easy for them to do this. There's virtually no risk to them. So, you know, what choice do they have? They're going to target the tastiest nut.
Good save. So the other challenge to this, of course, is that they're saying they're taking special precautions. So part of the article comes across as though everybody put stuff under the mattress. You can't trust this. The other side of it is, so that's not entirely accurate. But I mean, I'm saying that, you know, that there's a sky is falling aspect to this. And then on top of it, you have this, we are taking precautions. We are going to make this so much more secure. You have nothing to worry about. Listen to the sound, the honeyed sound of my words. And you know, I mean, there's only so much you can do before there are going to be risks. There are always risks every day. That's why security professionals have jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, would this wouldn't really be a problem, I guess, if the banks weren't all, it's just an electronic checkbook at this point. That's all it is. I mean, I'm sure they got money and gold in the vault somewhere, but you know, it's electronic notes on an e-register. You know, how do you protect that? You might want to just take the damn systems off the internet. But
So now there's going to be a nationwide VPN. Wolf, you know a little something about setting up VPNs. Do you think that would be a plausible method?
Well, I don't think that having a VPN will change anything, really. All it is just another tunnel for them to go through. It really, I'm surprised that they say that this is a wake-up call. I mean, there have been wake-up calls across, you know, the board for several years now. And for them to sit there and think, oh, this is a wake-up call, and we're concerned that we're going to do X, Y, and Z to help protect everything, there's still going to be people that are going to be somewhere in this chain.
Absolutely.
And
go ahead.
And even if they said that, hey, we're going to automate or make it more digital so that there's less, who's programming it? Still people.
Right.
So you're still going to have those issues.
I call you up, you act like you're pussy on injury. I don't have no trouble with you fucking.
Thank you for that interlude. So
it was Baby I Got Your Money by the ODB.
Ah.
Yes, it is.
And Coop, do you agree with this whole this entire discussion thread here, or do you have a different perspective to add to?
I'm really thinking, wonder whose bright idea was it to put it online anyway. You know,
well, so
this doesn't have to be online. You know, why not have a nice gap on it on like some of our most critical systems? You know, wouldn't that just make sense?
It's a valid point, but even as the article from CNBC sourced says, the official acknowledged that the Fed has no ability to control cybersecurity procedures at the roughly 250 foreign central banks that are around the world that have accounts at the Fed. Every user of the authenticated financial messaging traffic is ultimately responsible for its own system. That should be actually terrifying in and of itself that there's
fine.
No standard, but okay, why is it fine?
Well, it's fine. Just insure it away. That's all you got to do. That's what insurance is for. I don't care what a Latvian bank does with with their people's money. You know, I want to make sure that my interests are insured. So if they want to, expose, you know, 50 million people or, whatever to some type of threat, but it's their business, you know? And sure. Then if they screw up, and this is what people don't count, don't look into, is maybe instead of going hat in hand to the government and saying, we need protections and more money from you, maybe what they should do, or we need more laws passed, maybe what they should do is say, man, we should really up our insurance premium.
If there was one, but they don't have. I mean, most of these don't seem to have. Okay, you know what? I honestly don't know what the foreign international markets, rather, are doing as far as insuring their transactions.
It's everything comes with a cost, and these guys are just looking to shift it.
Sure.
Yep. But isn't that how bureaucracy works? Don't take care of the issue, just pass it on to some other scapegoat?
Well, that and hire a few more people to handle the issue, passing to the scapegoat.
True.
Build your feet them.
Oh, great.
So
okay. So on that note, I'm going to shift over to the massive security flaw, according to the IBI Times that we were using to discuss the flaw found in Office 365's security, unfortunately. And the first paragraph does read, two independent European security researchers have discovered a massive security flaw in Microsoft's Office 365 product that would make it possible for an attacker to gain unrestricted access to almost any business account and access company Outlook online email accounts, Skype for Business, OneNote, and OneDrive online storage. Now, in an article like this, another happy the sky is falling for business accounts in particular, how much of a risk does it really present? I mean, so how long would this has this existed long enough to have been exploited, you think? Or is this more of a bug bounty, a grab for bug bounty?
Put a bug bounty in, call it a day. I don't much. I mean, if you live by the cloud, you die by the cloud. If your business is putting everything and its brother up there, and you're not doing something else to protect the data at rest, that's your fault.
Yeah.
And also, you know, outsourcing your own security to somebody so huge like Microsoft instead of taking care of your own stuff, wouldn't that put be your own problem by digging your own grave? Truly?
I mean, you just measure the risk. You say, okay, what is the risk that Microsoft gets compromised and all of my dirty laundry's out there versus the alternatives, which is bring it in-house and pay more. Until people actually start putting figures to this, they're going to keep, you know, going to these cloud services, and then they're going to, as soon as that becomes more costly in a hack, they're going to roll back to bringing the services in-house. And then as soon as that becomes more costly, or there's another method for cloud storage that's a little bit more secure, they're going to roll right back to save themselves money. That's the beauty of the marketplace. You know, it's if Microsoft screws up too badly, Google or somebody else that's even unheard of is going to come into fill the gap there.
Sure.
So that's why in tech, unlike other industries, the smaller, leaner companies are the ones who, you know, kick ass, because they don't have, it's much easier to get into tech than it is to, say, get into the steel business.
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's something that you can easily, I wouldn't say manipulate, but at the same time, it's much easier to get a good start if you have certain levels of resources. And on that note, I mean, I was opening the floor earlier because I wanted to get your opinions. It does say in the article that unsurprisingly within 7 hours, not several, but 7 hours of the report coming in to Microsoft being sent in, that is, Microsoft fixed the vulnerability and did award the researchers with an actual bug bounty and call it a day, just as Vesh said. And again, it's just that time and time again, we're reminded if the system works, the system is going to work, and that is building the bridge through bug bounties to get this kind of stuff reported. It provides incentive, it opens the door, and makes a bridge for communication if handled appropriately. Just
there's three different ways to make money at bugs. You can either make it through, You can either make it through bug bounty programs, you can make it through off-market sales, or you can make it through marketing and salesmanship on, you know, like the Bad Lock, Heartbleed, these types of things. So that's, but at the end, it all comes down to money, payments, and all that stuff. And you know, people want cash, just like these email fishers. The BBC article, I think I'm eyeing over right now.
Mm-hmm. You're all right.
We're moving over to the BBC article.
Yeah.
Email, most popular phishing tool. I initially had a problem with that because I said, you know, what else out there is big in phishing? And then Ivory Wolf and Cooper came along and said, oh, you forgot about SMS and other types of phishing. So I said, yeah, okay, you're right. I guess the occasional fax fish still comes in from time to time. So I withdraw my complaint.
It does. It actually comes fax in from North Korea.
Well, you got to understand, Nigerian bank totally has to take care of their royalty. You know,
how many prints does that place have?
I don't know, but he's definitely got a lot of fax machines.
Do you think there's an army of fax machines there on the side? Yeah, is that it? No, obviously. It's one server. It's a Raspberry Pi that's probably cranking out all of those faxes.
Well, we've apparently has access to several printers and fax machines.
Oh, too soon.
So, but you know, going back to this BBC article here, this 90% of the incidents involved attempts to steal cash. And I said, I think that number is a lot closer to 100% because at some point in time, these guys are going to want cash.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to, you know, maybe there's that 0.01% that wants to get in there to, you know, for activism or whatnot. But most of these guys just want cold, hard cash. So, right.
But how are they going to get it? I mean, they've got to convince you. I mean, talk about the ultimate in social engineering from a certain point of view. See, it's like, I know somebody who very recently went to go buy a vehicle online, Craigslist, and I realized, yeah, that's the giant vulnerable point of the universe is you answered an ad on Craigslist. However, in this case, when it came back fishy, talk about fishy. The person is moving overseas. They have the vehicle in storage, ready to go, shrink-wrapped on a pallet, effectively, ready to ship from another place in the country. All you have to do is agree to send them PayPal money. PayPal? They want you to PayPal the cash directly to them. Is that the deal? Yes, and then they will send you the title to the vehicle and ship it. I'm like, uh-huh, sure. So I actually helped these people negotiate the whole situation. And like message by message, one at a time, talked, you know, sending these pulse check messages until we went through to the source of the supposed sale. And actually contacted the vendor and tried to get them involved. And of course it was completely fake. Of course it was a complete mess. The only thing that I begged these people not to do not open any attachments, do not open anything, because what? PDFs are going to be probably loaded with phishing software in the background, right? Or is that not popular anymore?
Yeah, that or, The old Trojan PDF is still pretty, pretty out there.
Yeah, still pretty popular, huh? I warned them they should probably go ahead and just wipe that machine and call it done because someone did open a file. But there's no way to tell.
Yeah, the funny thing is, during my research, well, for starters, in the article it says about 30% of the phishing emails had been opened by people in targeted organizations, and it's up from 23%. This goes to show that training doesn't work. So training isn't working. And the other thing too, because I have noticed a rise in a lot of these emails, is that the phishing emails look more authentic. There's still a lot of crap ones. Like I received some that said, you know, pay now, asshole. It's like, I'm not going to click on anything because if you are a legitimate company that was looking for money, you wouldn't say pay asshole.
True.
So
now also Wolf has a particularly good perspective on this topic because he's done deep research very recently on email phishing scams. And Wolf, what have you found actually in the research as well? I mean, briefly.
Well, briefly, one of the things that's always seen in the headers are the true location of where they're sending it from. So a lot of times they'll mask and say, hey, I'm using this email address or this domain name. But then you look at the IP where it's coming from initially, and it's from the Ukraine or anything like that. There's a lot of things in the headers that they can't manipulate. There's things that they can add, but they can't manipulate something that they don't have control over, which is the servers that it goes through.
Was it like X? Was it X Origin or whatever it was?
That will pop up usually from a mail client. So, and the funny thing is, a lot of you can actually do some fingerprinting based on different headers that pop up.
And that fingerprinting, when it comes, so, and this actually is the topic of a presentation that you've given at least once before. So we know that you have much more information out there on this topic, and people should come and check out that talk so they can actually enjoy and learn more about this topic, I would definitely suggest. Yes, that's a shameless plug on my part. And of course, you could come see that talk at B-Sides San Antonio on the 21st of May. It's at St. Mary's University, by the way, if you didn't know. And tickets are still on sale. There is still some availability left, but it is beginning to tighten up. So
you actually have a limit on how many you're able to sell, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we max out at 350, and that's only 250 adults and 100 younger folks. So it's the first year we're offering a youth track, or a 101 track, technically. And when we say youth, we're not talking about youths like, you know, four-year-olds. We're talking 13 to 18-year-old is the general idea. And the risk is that it sells out from the adult. The youths. The two youths. Anyway.
So we're not going to have anything for anybody younger?
Well,
no soldering with the pint size? Oh, come on.
Well, I figure
Cybernigma effectively prevents that. We couldn't have him at the conference.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, we just keep him within 1,000 feet, right?
Oh, gosh. It's visions of a harness and a long line like you put on a pet in the yard.
I think we need a picture that needs to happen now.
Maybe we just, he needs to have a shock collar. So whenever he's out of control, then you just buzz him.
And on that note, Google Play has been called a dirty, dirty place to play.
Thank you. Let's move on. Yes.
You know, the article here from the Register just makes me wonder how, you know, the analytics compare to app stores over in China, which have been truly called for many years the place to go to get malware and adware on your phones.
Yay.
One-stop shop. So, I don't know what y'all got to think about that.
I know I point all my Android devices to the Chinese app stores. Unfortunately, I'm sure they give American, you know, coming from an American IP, a different thing than what, you know, coming out on in Indonesia or something like that. You know, you're tunneling through a VPN or Tor or something. So looking at the recent Tor things, I don't even know how that would work these days. So
wouldn't
we have
you just
the,
be VPNing into the FBI directly?
Well,
pretty much.
There's so many issues with this former Tor developer creating malware for the FBI that it's absurd. It's got everything. It's got a guy that had a form of trust with a bunch of privacy experts, and then it turns out that he's an FBI rat, and then it turns out that he's working with some of the guys that were on the WikiLeaks and Ed Snowden thing. And then you find out he's working at MITRE. You know? I just love the concept of MITRE. It's like this, for those who don't know what a federally funded research and development center is, it's basically a place where the feds can park their money and launder it to projects of their choosing. I'm sorry, not launder it. I don't want to use that word.
Allocate,
and bypassing the usual hoops that they would have to go through if they were to, say, tap private industry for it because it's somehow holier to be a nonprofit.
But I don't I actually don't think that's entirely accurate, aside from the the particular parts of speech, the language we're choosing to use here. But I honestly thought it was a research and development corporation. So it's still a corporation. It's still an entity at that point, but it's not necessarily, it has limitations on what it's allowed to produce. I mean,
well, that's a shock. I certainly haven't seen any. So they get to manage the CVE list. They got a stranglehold on these vulnerability things. They've got guys working, you know, they got guys working with the privacy experts. They got guys working with the FBI. They got, you know, fingers in every single portion of, at every layer of the government, and, you know, God bless some of the MITRE employees. I know them very well, and they're good people. But MITRE is a mission. I got to tell you, that's ridiculous. These guys get to see the entire scope of the contracting process, where, you know, private industry only gets to see a little bit, and you see that they've got guys like this on their payroll.
Well, yeah, but, you know, okay. So is that done under the actual auspices of MITRE, or is this an act done by the individual? Who's
involved? Well, it seems to me that in the article it points out that he was part of MITRE and working on the FBI task force or something. What was it? We'll take a quick.
Okay,
quick
so I'm gonna jump over here and look at while you're looking at that. I wanted to bring up that there's a site called dap.dau.mil. So apparently this is the Defense Acquisition University website, and according to their wiki, a federally funded research and development center. I had it wrong, you had it right. It's a center, and apparently, according to the FAR, which is the Federal Acquisition Regulation, I believe that's what that's called, a federally funded research and development center is an activity sponsored under a broad charter by a government agency or agencies for the purpose of performing, analyzing, integrating, supporting, and or managing basic or applied research and or development, and that receives 70% or more of its financial support from the government, and a long-term relationship is contemplated. Most or all of the facilities are owned or funded by the government, and the FFRDC has access to government and supplier data, employees, and facilities beyond that common in a normal contractual relationship. So it does go deeper.
Wow, that sounds like enough holes to drive a Mack truck through. You know, broad charter, you know, applied research, all this is it's scary to have your foot in both those pools. And it does say at MITRE, Edmund worked closely with FBI Special Agent Stephen A. Smith to customize, configure, test, and deploy malware he called Cornhusker to collect identifying information on Tor users. Most widely, it's been known as Torsploit. Oh, wow. So there you go. There's your linkage. Yep. MITRE had a lab. It had this guy. He worked with the FBI, and he also worked with the privacy advocates to basically own Tor. So, I don't know. I don't know how much farther you need to go other than, like, hooking the guy up to a polygraph, and even then I don't think you'd get a straight answer. So,
man.
But these guys are, my disagreements with this fella go far beyond that. It goes into the company too, cause why not? What about the company? Let's check the company. If they're so mad at this Edmund guy, why not get mad at MITRE on the whole? They're the ones who came up with it. They're the ones who probably filled out some BAA. Get mad at them, too. Don't just get mad at this poor sucker.
Right, but so this actually yielded. So we can get upset from a community standpoint and say, how could you do this? But according to the article, this actually revealed and allowed for the arrest, or at least, what was it? I think a number of convictions, actually. They're saying that they found a bunch of folks who were up to no good. So is the flaw in allowing Tor to exist? No. Is the flaw in having this guy who made choices regarding what they wanted to do and cooperating with authorities to result in the arrest of people doing something wrong? How can we just focus on the fact that this guy, this human being, turned and said, you know what, instead of building Tor, I'm going to tear it down, I'm going to own it, I'm going to de-anonymize the results.
Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to share that relationship with the other guys that think I'm a privacy activist, just like they are. You know
what do you mean?
So, but the other thing is, they even unsaid, everybody knew what was going on. You don't have to go that deep to find, you know, this guy probably talking to some of the other privacy advocates or other Tor true believers that are out there, and then at the same time he's a rat. I mean, or I'm sorry, not a rat, a legal proxy or whatever you want to call it.
Right. You know? An advisor.
So, but it's just silly, and I don't care how many convictions they net. You'd net a shitload of convictions if you put a camera on every street corner. I don't want them doing that either.
So, Wolf, I want you to weigh in here because you've been quiet on this.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, I see. When it comes to hacking, just baseline, I have no problems with anyone, you know, destroying Tor, building it back up, doing whatever they need to do. That's just part of the community. But, you know, without getting into the politics of it all, I do see where Vesh is coming from. So, but I'll leave it at that. But when it comes to the actual act of doing it, I thought it was fantastic. It's awesome.
So that comes back to the, okay, so we disagree with the fact that this person helped to divide the privacy situation and ignore that in favor of finding people who admitted to the intent to view child pornography. So, okay, so now...
That's it. Folks, that's the same thing every time. It's,
yep, yeah.
It's hold up. It's put the kitty diddlers on the firing line because I want to pass some broad legislation. You know, I want more funding for education. We're some cute kids. Let's hold them up.
Sure.
You know, that's what they do. And it's not, it's a disturbing and reprehensible act. But I am far more scared of, having a Tor link and going and talking to somebody, maybe in another country, and this is just hypothetical, then I am somebody coming and have it their way with my kids. I'm far more scared of the likely rather than the no chance or very slim chance, you know, and plus that's up to me to monitor anyways. You know, there's scumbags all over the place, and I'm sick of them holding up these absolute bags of trash and then saying that, oh, because this guy's a bag is an absolute piece of garbage, we're going to have to go after the whole thing.
Well, so that's existed from time immemorial, right? I mean, there are always going to be people who do things that are reprehensible.
It's sophistry. It's sophistry. You know, they're just using that's what sophistry is. It's using rhetoric and your position to make a lesser argument the better argument. You know, if you were sitting there and this was, going back to, never mind. I don't want to get into a whole friggin' philosophy class here.
No,
but I'll pull back. I maintain my stance, but I'm going to pull back on the philosophy class, but that's, they just think that they have a blank check to do, carte blanche to do, you know, whatever they want at this point.
So okay, I'm going to cut in there and I'm going to say, okay, your point is well made. So you, as the person who's looking for a job in a very tough economy, here's your opportunity. Someone approaches you. You've got a skill set. You're doing what you need to do to put food on your table. Let's imagine. So I'm creating this complete theoretical argument here to suggest, all right, if someone approached you, a poor college student who's an intern at this organization, and you've demonstrated your ability to have skills, and someone says, you know what, there's something in it for you if you're willing to help us figure this out, regardless of the fact that it opens the door to whether it's the those who do negative physical acts or those who are committing fraud or any other, just committing private conversations. Is there another side to this that has to be examined too? And of course there is. But I'm asking you guys, if we can leave some of the politics out, if that's possible, from a technical point of view, just if you're hungry, if you're trying, or am I just off base?
Oh yeah, if I'm hungry, I guess it's okay to go steal a loaf of bread.
Okay, yeah, I see your point. You're going to go right to the philosophical argument. That's right back to the same story.
Yeah. So, but like I said, this is more of these agencies, international, national, whatever, they want that blank check to go and do whatever they please, and that's what they want. They want that insistence, and they're getting it. I mean, Cooper, you had an article about the Supreme Court changes.
Yeah, The Intercept had a good write-up on just that in its own. FBI getting a blank check by the Supreme Court, giving them the right to hack anywhere in the world. It's like, are you kidding? We talk about rights, what have you, and, you know, not imposing our own views on the rest of the world. Are we now America, world police? Are we gonna go that way? I thought that was one of the worst movies of all time.
I was gonna ask if you were making a Team America reference.
Yep, I was indeed, because it's just as stupid as that movie. Come on.
Well, I don't so much have I don't have a problem with, and I know that people are gonna think that, oh, this is contradictory to your previous point about how you're not liking the miter guy, which I want to perpetually refer to him as. And it was the rule change, right? I don't have a problem with that they are chasing after people in anonymized spaces. I'm not so offended by that they're going in and saying, we don't know where this guy's coming from. They've done that with other forms of tech and of other forms of communications in the past. And I'm okay with that power. But when you find out, it's just like when you accidentally collect on a U.S. person and you find out you're supposed to strike them from the record. You know, that's it. So, and then, but for here, the issue I have is them being able to hack into botnets, and it doesn't look like there's even a nod to the fact that, hey, if the guys in the United States, you can't hack that box. You're going to have to deal with either local authorities, you're going to have to get your warrant. So that part is what I have a problem with. Not the, we don't know where this guy is, so the default is to be able to collect. I don't have that. I don't have a problem on that. I think that's in scope for what current government law is. But I mean, I have a problem with it overall, but you know, I'm still a law abiding citizen and I don't have a problem with the law as written, obeying the law as written.
Right.
But with this, they're just taking a very broad view. It's very broad. Very broad.
Thank you, RoboVesh. No, the truth of the matter is that yes, it opens the door far too wide. And that's the presumption. That's the whole nature of the article saying that it's going to blow this whole thing so wide open that anything can be an unreasonable search option here. And that gets back to are we worried about, as the article that was put in the rundown for where did it go? I just had it. There it is. From Naked Security, that actually talks about someone who is a suspect who was unwilling to decrypt a hard drive, has been jailed indefinitely. And it shows that it describes that a 17-year veteran and former sergeant of the Philadelphia Police Department who suspected of, but not formally charged with, possession of child abuse images has been found in contempt of an order to decrypt two hard drives. What's amazing about this is that they've been imprisoned for over 6 months in Philadelphia's Federal Detention Center. Again, according to the NakedSecurity.Sophos.com article. And that amazes me that it's basically, you haven't been officially charged. And that's what this article is the previous article is kind of hinting at, is saying, okay, look, if you're unwilling, you know, if we can do a broader search, we're going to come up with more of these situations where people are going to be held. Now, there's nothing wrong with holding someone accountable if they're doing something negative. But again, Vesh's point earlier is, look, it's always going to be, we're going to raise the flag on these other issues. And I'm curious what you guys think, starting with Wolf and then to Coop. and back to Vanish. Would you guys be willing to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. So this is a very interesting article. My opinion, he should not be in jail. He should not be in prison for not giving the passcode. And the reason I feel that way is because you're treading that line where you're saying that everything in your head is now, we should be able to access it. And that's a fine line to, you know, especially with the privacy, you know, pushback.
Mm-hmm.
If he's hasn't been charged, he should not be in jail.
I mean, is this Minority Report now? Is that what we're facing here? Is the concept of if they did or didn't, the fact that this person chooses not to reveal the actual nature of the data, whether there is or isn't, it's the fact that they've been charged. Well, now they're being alleged. Is that the right word here? Alleged? Is that it?
It's like suspected.
Doesn't seem like that way.
Well,
it's like he's a suspect, suspected of, but not formally charged.
Well, I guess they're just going to have to go back to what was called regular police work instead of, you know, they want it easy. They want it to go back to the day where they could go and look under the guy's bed and find a bunch of whatever.
Polaroids, whatever. Yeah.
But there's never been in the history of our country, there's never been more people in law enforcement with a better funding mechanism. And so even with how they found some of the 9/11 guys and whatnot, they did a lot of that with police work, with good old fashioned boots on the ground police work, and knocking on doors, talking to neighbors, sniffing around. And this is just one of those areas where it's like, sorry, fellas, you can't just launch, Metasploit with your own custom modules on it and have it easy.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to do a little bit of your own work.
Wow,
and that's good.
And we stepped over. Go ahead.
I hate having to defend reprobates, but you know, if you can't, if they go down, what's next? You know, look at what they do to smokers, for crying out loud. I have a cigarette these days.
Well, before we get into that, I want to give Coop the opportunity because he was going to talk also about this topic.
Yeah, it's just really, really scary the way things, justice in this country is headed. You can even relate it back to, the people that we, totally imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay for how many years without them seeing a court, being charged, and being outside of being prisoners of war.
Well, a little bit different there. They are foreign soldiers captured in a foreign land. No. They are foreign ex captured in foreign land. So that's a little bit different than
we're talking
in
about the mentality of our government and furthermore into our police state, law enforcement. Where does it end? That's my point. Is we've seen it start that way, and the shit's rolling downhill, man. How much clearer can it be?
Well, we've had that ability in waging war for a long time. And that wasn't a, we could do this in war. Why not during peacetime? No, that's just, there is a slow degrade there, but I don't want to get into what's the difference between the rights that, we have when we're fighting a war, which is, kill them and grill them. Versus the rights that we have as citizens of the country, which are, you better go to that book and point to me what I did wrong.
Yeah. And so now, if we're going to start talking in that realm, then we could actually, I think this conversation would go a lot longer than a single podcast, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. So I want to hop into some of these methods that these guys have been using, like the Platinum Gang thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where the post from SC Magazine, I don't know what the S and the C stands for, but it's just SC Magazine. And I always thought that this was a natural thing that was going to occur. So does everybody know what hot patching is?
No, go for it.
You know, in, in,
oh,
Yeah, in-memory patching. Like, basically, if you were to disassemble a Microsoft DLL these days or anything, you would see this before most of the functions, you would see a little move EDI, EDI. Like, move the EDI register to the EDI register, right? That's basically a do-nothing, a no-op. And what that does is it gives you just enough space to put a little hot patch command, a little jump in there, so that if you have a patch rollout, instead of having to shut down and restart while you're dropping the DLL to disk, you can patch it in memory and then just restart later. You know, you don't have to have that downtime. So I always thought I bet you people are abusing the hell out of this. You know, that if Microsoft uses it to patch, then why the hell wouldn't some other things use to patch? I know that there's several tools in RE's arsenal that will use and abuse that hot patching thing. So why not malware?
Well, that's an excellent point, which I think begs to bring in the. Sorry, I'm stepping halfway back a little bit in one of the other hacks of the week section, that the Pirate Bay itself was hit by malware and was hit by ransomware at that.
I'm sorry, that's awesome. I mean, it's nothing against Pirate Bay, because Pirate Bay has a lot of, you know, cool stuff, and they serve their purpose, but it just goes to show that ransomware hits everyone. It's like, no one is safe from it. All you do is just the stupid click, and there you go.
It's the same thing. What was it? InfoSec Institute got hit by Angler exploit kit. Yep. And here's something that needs to happen in industry too, is you ad click people that generate money off of these things. I'm sorry, but what you're going to have to do is actually do like real legitimate copy on your ads, and then send them to the website that you want them to click through, and they're going to have to incorporate that ad into their web page. You've had it really easy over the years with ad banners, ad rollers, JavaScript slideshows, things like that, and now you are sitting there griping about ad blocks, you're griping about JavaScript blockers, and you're the ones causing the problem. So what you need to do is you need to go the extra mile and actually work, God forbid, a little bit harder and give them the ads that you want posted. And that's what you're going to have to do. It's not that hard to track an inbound link, you know, from whence it came. So I know that when somebody clicks on this picture in this browser, and guess what? It's a complete ad blocker bypass. You put it as a picture, you put it as a sidebar, and no ad blocker is going to block you unless ones that are blocking specific elements on a page, and I don't think anybody would take it that far.
But see, that's why, you know, so think about that in terms of the Brave browser. You've heard of that, right? So the actual, so that's a web browser being built by some very smart folks who want to change the way that the ad tech ecosystem works. Their actual copy off of brave.com says that with the ad tech ecosystem out of control, users have revolted and blocking ads has become the new weapon of choice. But this results in a race to the bottom where nobody wins without the ability for content creators to earn money for their efforts. They may need to shut down or find a new source of revenue. Users could be left with nowhere to browse. Relegated to hand-picked content from controlled sources. Brave is saving the web by building a new suite of cutting-edge web browsers, more than one, that feature class-leading speed, security, and protection, plus new ad revenue sharing solution to keep publishers in business. Now, that's an interesting thing. How are they
going? Do we have a sponsor?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm actually reading from their copy page because it's different. Because the interesting thing is that they're going to block ads, but that they want to incorporate a new method, kind of like you're talking about. Well, maybe not the exact same way, but now it's going to require a retooling for those who sell advertising. So is this an evolution in advertising we're seeing on the web? Or like you say, it's just not going to be that easy anymore because people are tired of the shenanigans and having so many different scripts running on a page that you have to have a quad core machine just to surf the web, which, you know, used to work on a netbook, but give that a shot these days.
All right, just remember when you use it, they are going to quote unquote anonymize your history, your web history traffic, okay? And they are going to analyze. That's what in the Wikipedia page, it says that it will examine your web history traffic and send that on, you know, over the transom. So you better have a good code review and set and reliability in. Let say I have a static IP, right? Sure. I have several static IPs, but if you see one of them coming to me, or you see web history, right? Web traffic coming from me, you're going to pretty quickly be able to say, oh, I know exactly who went to that website. Mm-hmm. It's somebody in my house.
Sure.
So just be mindful, is the anonymization, what is anonymized? It doesn't say what's no. all, what all, how does it anonymize your web history? And maybe you want to go on GitHub and build it for yourself so that you know exactly what it's parsing. In that case, I don't care, if somebody wants to try to take a stab at this, just remember, know what you're getting into. They're going to be examining your web history and they're going to be sending it over to, ad folks and maybe other people.
Okay, so it's a good point. No, they're not sponsors. We don't have a sponsor. I was simply excited about it because, it's been a long time since we've seen a new browser, new player entering the arena. And so I'm very curious to see what actually develops out of that. And they're making words out there. They're making claims. They're saying things that sound like they could be very interesting. And I'm really excited about the possibility of changing the framework a little bit, you know, something that maybe gets us to rethink how things are done. And you know, look, there was an add-on I think it was Internet Explorer back a whole long time ago called Crystal, Crystal something. I can't remember the name of it. It was an add-on. And what meth. It did is, not meth. No, thank you. So Method Crystal Browser, what? You could actually add on top of the existing framework of Internet Explorer, and it added tabs, and it added so many shortcuts, the control enter, all these things that were not normally part of the browser itself at the time. So yeah, this is going back a long ways. Because now, I mean, basically, it's monkey see, monkey do. You get one organization, you know, it's like the old joke of how many guitar players does it take to change a light bulb? And I think it was meant to be rock guitar players. And it said, oh, you know, one to actually do something interesting and all the others to say, oh, I could have done that. And so it's not my joke. This is where I heard this from years ago. But it was the idea that, okay, we all just say, oh, I'll have a version of tabs. I'll have a version of a different kind of minimal interface. And I'm going to change this. And so when do we see something that makes it new? Like, you know, if it's not the Crystal Port browser add-on, is it? What makes it different? And so it's expanding. Even Microsoft is trying, you know, new. They're bringing out, they brought out, but they still haven't added plugin support for Edge. So where is the web going? And it's good to see that there's still development going on and there's something new happening. That was my point. So enough on that. I'm going to get off my little soapbox of joy over seeing new things. And I will move to, there is a neat idea of a Raspberry Pi with a security system that was posted on Adafruit. And thank you, Coop, for pointing that in there, because I happen to enjoy and love these project machines because it allows you to tinker in different things. And so it's a tiny, tiny little security system. And the gentleman who posted it, it's from Hackster.io, and Max Williams is the guy, and the article is from Adafruit's blog. And the pull quote says, one of the main goals was to have the system completely automatic. They didn't want to have to arm or disarm the thing when they were leaving the house or coming back. They figured the easiest way to get that result was to try and detect mobile phones of the home occupants. So think about that. So you're just in any port in the storm, right? When it comes to data, you've got to find that thing you want to detect and work from. So what if you decided that the actual active thing should be proximity of a cell phone of one of the registered occupants being within range? It's kind of a neat idea. I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts on this and if you guys are using your Pis for anything, or rather project machines, for something interesting in the home.
I like it. I'd be interested to see what happens if you kind of replayed some of it, some of the cell traffic through, like, say, a Blade RF or something, and amplified it. If you couldn't disarm the security system by just using simple RF tricks.
It would be an interesting project to run, for sure, just to see what you could develop from that.
It's this kind of thing that I find so exciting about this, as well as the tinkering aspects, because I am a freak for a good amount of tinkering, because that's actually how I've learned so much and learned from so many people.
Well, I know I mentioned before, one of the projects I'm working on with my Raspberry Pi is to actually create an Archer doorbell.
I'm waiting to hear it, man. I still haven't heard your Archer doorbell go off.
I know. It's kind of been on the back burner, but I'm going to start it up again.
Well, all right then, and we'll have to come back to it another time, because we are out of time. So thank you so much for joining us for Saha Says. Please keep us in mind, and remember that you can find us on Pocket Casts, on iTunes, and direct links are available through the RSS feed as well, and we will talk to you next time. Have a good night.